Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Well, I guess we should do an online poll if we should conduct interviews that same way. Are you going to be doing this? Possibly. Next month? Possibly. The word scintillating came up as I read it.
I'm surprised ESPN didn't pick it up or anything.
Well, that's the stunning part. Major network listens to something like that and says, my goodness, we have to have that guy. On a scale of 1 to 10, what did you get out of that exchange?
That possibly AJ will be possibly doing something.
I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, it had to be a 1.
Right.
I mean, it was bizarro world. Oh, well. We'll try a different approach with our next guest. How about that? We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. And the Hilscher's General Store hotline open at 1-800-795-9565, powered by Hilscher's General Store. Go to www.hilscherstore.com. Hilscher's General Store, the 21st century version of the General Store. 7 miles south of Seals Grove on Routes 11 and 15, and we call out on the Hilscher General Store hotline to Doug Smith, the Junior High College strength and conditioning coach. They're having the 13th annual strength and conditioning conference taking place at Juniata for strength and conditioning coaches across Pennsylvania. Doug, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, we got a good connection here.
There you go. Great to hear you, Doug.
Okay.
You've been there for 20 years. It's the 13th year that they've had this. What along the way, what do you want people to pick up at a clinic like this?
Well, the biggest thing with the strength and conditioning, what we're really talking about is performance enhancement for the athletes. And what we do, we basically cater to all aspects of it. There's so many different things. It's more than just in the strength and conditioning part of it. It has to do with our athletic trainers, our administrators, the sports coaches, right on down the line. And that's what we pretty much cater to with the speakers that we bring in. And that's what our attendees basically are. They're from all those different fields. And because really everybody has to be sort of on the same page when you're dealing with your athletes. It's not just the performance that you're trying to increase, but it's also the risk of injury, injury prevention, nutrition. It's the whole aspect of everything. So, and that's what the clinic basically entitles right there. It's, that's where our speakers come from. They come from all over the country. We've been real, real fortunate. We've had people, right this year, we have people in from Northwestern. Of course, we have Andrea Hootie in from Kansas. She's been coming here ever since she's been up at UConn. We got people in from, you name it. We've Penn State. We have Cam Davison coming in from up there in the past. We've had strength coaches come in from there. All across the country, all the way up and down, all the big schools. Got a lot of professional coaches coming in at times. So, but everybody basically spreads the same message. You know what I mean? It's teaching things correctly, designing programs, implementing the programs that's specific for the sport, the season of the sport, the athlete, the facilities. It's sort of a logistics type thing. Where your athletes, your equipment, and it would get a lot out of it. I mean, it's a constant learning process when you're in the business. And been real fortunate to have been involved with this. Not only are you getting the information, but it's a great opportunity to network, you know what I mean, and find out what people are doing at other places and meet people and establish some really good relationships. So that's basically...
Over time, though, some things in this industry have changed. Equipment's changed, training techniques have changed. How important have those changes been, and how much time has it taken really even for you to adapt to some of the changes in the industry?
Well, you know, that's a touchy situation, but things are recycled. Technology has changed things. I mean, the technology, they can put a monitor on your arm now, and they can, you know, we take maximum heart rate, and we can design our programs. We get feedback. We might put something on the bar that tells you the bar speed. But technique is technique. I mean, weightlifting, powerlifting, functional training, it's been the same thing over and over, recycled. I think what's gotten better in the business is people realize that there's certain things that you want to plug into certain sports. It's a sport specific, you know what
right,
I mean, as
yeah.
far as what you're training, you know what I mean, with your volumes, what energy systems you're using, what volumes, what intensities. New equipment is going to come and go. But you'll see right now, most of programs, like we've been in it a long time, we use equipment down here. We use the power racks, we use the platforms, we use the ropes, we use the tires, we use the sledgehammers, sandbags. We've been doing that for years and years and years. And when we started doing it, it wasn't real popular. Now it's popular again. Yeah. I mean, it just cycles through. The one thing that's always consistent with a good program, and it's not where you're at. I mean, but are you teaching? Are you teaching things properly? Are you making sure that your athletes are making the maximum gains in the weight room, or on your tracks or whatever your playing surface is where you're training? Are they making maximum gains? And that's the whole thing right there. I mean, are you training them so that they're ready for the season, so they're less likely to be injured? I mean, that's the whole thing right there. I mean, when you get on the internet right now, there's so much stuff that's on the internet, and some of that stuff has been in and out of gyms for years. Some of the stuff is really things that we stopped doing 10 years ago because they were, you know, damaging to the shoulders. I mean, it recycles. What you have to have as a strength coach is a sound base of what to do and when to do it, and that's the big thing right now. The technology, of course, has changed. The technology, I think we're getting better and better with the nutrition side of it, which is just as important as the lifting. But you know how the nutrition is, the fads come and go, but there's a lot of good stuff out there, and that's changed a lot, but that's what the clinic's here for too, is to try to keep up with the new technologies, and that helps a lot. That helps a lot with the coaches that come to it.
Because as you said, strength and conditioning is certainly. Go ahead, Doug. Sorry.
Okay, that's basically it. I think good coaching is good coaching. Good coaching is teaching. It's not being a drill master, but it's teaching proper techniques, proper mechanics, and understanding what your program is about. You know, and the longer you're into it, you realize you're a program. I mean, when you break down a football program, you got by position. I mean, you're doing different programs, working different drills by position. You're working it by individual needs. I mean, we're working hand in hand with the training staff. I think that's one of the biggest things that has really come about, at least on my level here, is that, used to be strength and conditioning coaches and trainers sort of were in two different worlds, and it was a push-pull type thing. Now, you know, you learn that, hey, you could work together in a partnership right there. You bring your coaches on board right now. Your sports coaches are getting more and more involved in understanding what it's about, because if your sports coaches really don't buy into what you're doing, your athletes aren't going to buy into it. So everybody works as a team and as a unit, and I think that's what's really evolved. I think in the strength and conditioning. At one time, you had a strength coach down there that was putting people through lifts on the machines, on the weights, whatever. But that's far from what it is nowadays. I mean, we spend as much time, you know, down at the stadium doing jump drills, working in our sand pits, I mean, working on our track with our speed, our multi-directional movement type stuff, than we do in the weight room. And a lot of this with the trainers and with the coaches and with the strength people, I mean, now you have to have a real good line of communication. And I think that's also, you know, that makes for a real, real good, strong program for your athletes. And nowadays, your athletes, really, when they come in, I mean, the big thing with well as I do, with recruiting at any level, I mean, with having good programs, I mean, we've been real successful with a lot of our sports here, and it's really getting the best athletes and the best student athletes in here. And nowadays, you know, the athletes are looking for a place where they can maximize their potential. I mean, they just don't want to come in. It's not play by the season. It's a year-round. I mean, our kids are a year-round commitment. I mean, it's in-season, post-season, pre-season. And it's really a commitment, and they're looking for somebody that can put together good programs for them and give them the opportunity to be the best they can be. And although we're working with our trainers, we want to keep our kids out of the training room. You know what I mean? We don't want them in there injured. So most schools are really getting on board with the off-season, in-season strength and conditioning programs, and I think it's a great thing for everybody.
You mentioned the part about communicating with the athletes, and of course this clinic coming up. You have to be around them, especially in the off season, more than the coaches are. You know, you're the one that's allowed to be with them. When it comes to motivation and so forth, what are some of the important areas that you impart to others about not only being a strength and conditioning coach, but also being a motivator and someone who identifies who is actually working hard and who doesn't understand they're working hard?
Well, you made a real big point right there, and I'm really glad you said that, because that is one of the things that I talk to with coaches all the time, is that basically, because I'm spending so much time with them, I can be more objective in my evaluation of who is your hard workers. I can tell, you know, all your game is basically a change, is a, sometimes game becomes a momentum type thing, and it's based on somebody not focusing, not paying attention to detail, not playing through, not staying the whole game. You can pretty well define your character in the weight room here. I mean, we're not talking about just getting on the bench and repping, but I'm talking about with the drills that we put them through and the grinds. And we have some things that we put our athletes through that their character comes out. And that is something where, you know, the coaches, they really, it's really to their benefit to communicate with your conditioning staff, because they can tell you where the kids really are, who walked the walk and who talks the talk. And you really get to know your kids in here. This is a great place for that, and it's a great tool for us to communicate with the coaches to allow them to know who their players are, because they see them in a whole different world than we do. They see them on the practice field. They see them in a game situation. And sometimes things can get, and if you really think about it, sometimes they can get kind of subjective as far as your evaluation of who's who and who's doing what, because you can sort of get lost in the crowd out there. But here you can really evaluate character. And that's the other good thing about the weight programs. Our developmental programs. It's not just about a physical thing, but it's about a mental toughness, teaching kids attention to detail, how to be team players, work with each other. We have our players in here. I know most people do, probably critiquing each other, working with each other, communicating with each other. I mean, this is a great place to learn to be a team player and work hard. And motivate each other, and motivate yourself. And yeah, as a strength coach, you bet everybody that comes in here, it's different. But I'm sure you've been around enough athletes from different sports, and even positions within sports, that the personalities take on a little bit different twist.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we definitely motivate our women's volleyball players a little bit different than we evaluate our defensive linemen. Yeah. And our defense and our wide receivers are totally handled different than our defensive linemen. I mean, it's everybody's a little bit different, and you got to find out what makes that person tick. But one thing across the board, I think, that really helps with motivating, if the athlete knows that you're doing what's in their best interest and that you really care about them and you want to do to push them to be the best, they'll buy onto it and they'll work with you. If they think that you're just there to, you know, for other reasons, you have a problem. But yeah, it's the biggest part of getting, hey, when you have asking kids to do extreme physical task, they have to believe in you. And I've been real fortunate being here and working with the athletes, and we sort of established that rapport. Does that answer your question?
It sure does. Doug,
that's unusual that you'd ask that question, because if I'm dealing with a coach, if I'm dealing with a sports coach, I really get excited if they ask that same question, because yeah. that sometimes coaches will miss out on that right there. You know, I mean, that's a very, very important part of what my job is.
It's a huge part of it. 14th and 15th, this is being held. It should be a great weekend and a lot of information getting out. It's the 13th Annual Pennsylvania State Strength and Conditioning Clinic. Doug Smith, it was an absolute pleasure, and hopefully we'll get you back on again, because I found this to be fascinating.
Well, listen, I really appreciate the opportunity, and I hope I didn't ramble on too much, because I can do that. I talk about this all day, but hey, thank you very much, okay?
Okay, Doug. Some people say, I have a tendency to do that, Doug. Ramble on too much. Doug Smith, strength and conditioning coach at Juniata College, the 13th annual strength and conditioning conference and clinic taking place at Juniata this weekend for those across the state. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hey, Susquehanna Valley, if you're in need of a pre-owned or new vehicle, make sure you stop by Blaze Alexander Ford this Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday for Moonlight Madness. That's right, the world's greatest sale is back again at Blaze Alexander Ford, Route 45 in Lewisburg, where you're going to find discounts up to $10,500. You're going to find payments on vehicles as low as $119 a month. You're going to find interest rates as low as 0%. Heck, that's free money. We've got a selection of over 200 pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, and sport utilities, and over 150 new ones to choose from. So whatever you're looking for, we've got it at the lowest prices of the year. Plus, as always, we're giving away $500 cash with no purchase necessary each night at 10 p.m. So get in to Blaze Alexander Ford, Route 45 in Lewisburg, to get a super great deal on that next new or used vehicle and not have to pay anything till September of this.
It's interesting. I hear all these commercials about Father's Day, which is great because, you know, I'm into propping up the economy as much as possible, except I'm a bad example when it comes to all this, because my kids will ask me, what do you want? And I always tell them, look, don't waste your money on me. Spend it on your mother. Okay, just do that. Make Mother's Day a big deal. When it comes to me, save your money. Sounds magnanimous, but when you're the dad, you sort of have that attitude. Yeah, I'd rather just have them get me a card. Now, for all of you out there selling Father's Day stuff, sell all you want. And if dads want whatever, want golf clubs or whatever, great, go buy them. But I've always had that attitude. I've always told them, look, when it comes to me, save your money. Christmas, save your money. You know. Kevin, on the other hand, I mean, his kid can't buy him enough. But then again, he saves that kid's life. No, I'm just kidding. Sarah, stop laughing.
I am laughing. No, it's true. It's true.
So what are you going to do?
For Father's Day?
Yeah.
I send my dad a card. My parents are down in Baltimore, so...
Right.
I'll send him a card, give him a call. And
That's perfect. I think that's perfect. You know, a couple Orioles tickets, maybe, but whatever you want to do, it's up to you.
Right, exactly. Probably like that. Now you're giving him ideas.
okay, where you end up benefiting as well.
That's true. Hey, I got us some Orioles tickets.
Yes. You know, My kids actually did that for me once. And they said, look, it was on Father's Day. And they said, we have Orioles Red Sox tickets, and we're going to go. I said, great. And it turned out it was at a point where my daughter got a job in Woodbridge, Virginia. So we helped her move in. And the trip from Woodbridge to Baltimore should not be as long as it was. We missed the first two innings before we finally settled in. And, yes, your Orioles won.
Ah, good to hear.
They won 9-2. So, rare when I see the Red Sox lose in person. Very rare. But it was not that day.
Well,
it was in the upper
true.
Deck.
But I'm sure there were a lot of Sox fans there, as always.
There were. I was in the upper deck, and virtually everybody in the upper deck was a Red Sox fan. It was like being at Fenway Park, except in Baltimore.
That's exactly right. They have such a huge turnout, especially in Baltimore.
I mean, it was like being in Fenway Park, except with crab cakes. It was great.
That's not so bad.
No, it's not so bad at all. Bottom of the hour news coming up. We'll follow it up with the 100th for Vince Lombardi, who many will tell you, and as somebody who lived through that era, he's the greatest NFL coach ever. I mean, you know, it's interesting to hear modern people say, well, you know, what about Bill Walsh? Great coach. But to me, the top two are Vince Lombardi, Paul Brown.
On the Central Susquehanna Valley, learn about it first on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And looking forward to the next time we go out there. This is Vince Lombardi's 100th birthday today. And before Super Bowl II, he gave this brief speech that really tells you who he is and what he's about with his team.
You're the only team, maybe, in the history of the National Football League who ever had this opportunity to do it twice. Boys, I'm proud of you. I'd be so proud of that. I just fill up. It's not going to come easy. This is a club that's going to hit you. They're going to try to hit you. You're going to take it out. Just hit, just run, just block, and just tackle. You do that, there's no question what the answer is going to be in this ball. Keep your poise. There's nothing that they can show you out there. You have to face the number of times, right?
Right.
Vince Lombardi before Super Bowl II, the Packers did do something that day that has not been duplicated in the National Football League. They won their third straight NFL title. Yes, it was the second Super Bowl, but the Packers also won the 1965 NFL championship where they beat the Cleveland Browns. Vince Lombardi, I've been fortunate to grow up in and live through multiple eras, where I can talk about seeing Mantle play, I can talk about seeing Lombardi coach, I can talk about seeing Bobby Orr play, you know, I can talk about seeing Red Auerbach and Bill Russell. I mean, I can talk about a lot of things and give perspective from what I've seen, because the history lesson that you're taught, usually on ESPN, is really a very poor one. Because there are too many people within that organization that believe that sports began on September 5th, 1979. That's when they started covering it as a network. And that's not true. If you were to ask me who the two greatest coaches in the NFL happen to be, one I would know of directly. The other one would be just guesswork on my part. But one is Vince Lombardi, whom I saw and coached. And then Paul Brown, I wasn't alive during Paul Brown's great years with the Cleveland Browns. I was when he was with the Cincinnati Bengals. But it doesn't take much reading to sit there and realize that so many of the modern things that you see now in pro football emanated from that mind. And by the way, who was on Bill Walsh's staff with the Cincinnati Bengals? Who was on Paul Brown's staff with the Cincinnati Bengals? Bill Walsh. He learned from him. So I've always thought that those were the two greatest NFL coaches ever. And in an era where everything's about the Super Bowl, no NFL team has won three straight NFL championships. Lombardi was the offensive coordinator for the New York Giants. Jim Lee Howell was the head coach. The defensive coordinator, by the way, was some guy named Tom Landry. And Lombardi had chances at some other jobs, but he privately confided to people that he wondered if his Italian heritage was holding him back. And you have to remember, it's a different time and a different era, where you had in the 40s and 50s, Irish Americans, Italian Americans, German Americans. Now, today, we don't, today you don't have those labels. And I'll give you an example. My mother, God bless her soul, was born in Cambridge. And until she was 4 years old, she spoke nothing but Portuguese. Her maiden name was Ferreira. So she lived in an all-Portuguese neighborhood. Grocery store was in Portuguese. Okay? All the neighbors spoke Portuguese. Mass was in Portuguese. She did not learn English until my grandparents moved to Lexington in suburban Boston. That's the way it was in the 30s and 40s. You got into your ethnic neighborhood, and rarely did you leave. So this was more of an issue in this particular time. Now today, there are very few ethnic neighborhoods today, very few. In fact, the story I just told is one a lot of people can't identify with. And Lombardi felt that that held him back, and yet the Packers were the ones who took the chance and decided to hire him. The Packers were 1-11 the previous year, 1958. 1959, he takes over, they go 7-5. 1960, they make the NFL championship game, they lose the Eagles, that's the last Eagles championship. 61, they win the NFL title, beat the Giants. 62, beat the Giants. 63-64, they finished second in their division, which back then, by the way, got you nothing. There was no wild card. 65, they beat the Colts in a playoff game because they were tied for first, and then they went out and they beat the Cleveland Browns and Jim Brown. In fact, it was Jim Brown. I think it might have been Jim Brown's last game. And then 66, they beat the Cowboys, and then beat the Chiefs. Then they beat the Cowboys and Chiefs again, the Ice Bowl, followed by the win over the Raiders in that speech you just heard. Lombardi was a disciplinarian. He was someone who believed in repetition and also kept it relatively simple, that execution meant everything. He had a quarterback in Bart Starr that called all his own plays. Starr, by the way, was a 17th round draft pick out of Alabama. He had a hard-running runner named Jim Taylor out of LSU. He had a flamboyant playboy at tailback named Paul Hornung. And yet what's interesting about Lombardi is that as much as he drove his players, it didn't matter whether it was Dave Robinson. And I know Dave. I mean, Dave's a Penn Stater. He's going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame this summer. I played a round of golf with Dave Robinson. Dave Robinson, Willie Davis, Bart Starr, conservative as conservative gets, or a flamboyant Paul Hornung, they loved Lombardi. They loved him. Lombardi went to the establishments in Green Bay and said that if they did not allow the African-American players into the establishment, he would make sure nobody went to the establishment. You got to play hardball on certain things. He did. He was the one that came up with the electrical heating system under Fields. That's why he was so embarrassed about the 1967 NFL championship game. Yeah, it sort of worked. You know, they talk about the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. Well, it shouldn't have been frozen. They had the thing on. They actually had it installed. And what happened was they put the tarp over it, and condensation formed. They took the tarp off, and it iced. But he came up with the system, the one that they use today in many places. But Lombardi, also spent too much time at the office. Didn't spend enough time at home. His wife and his children would tell you that. And, of course, obsessed too much over wins and losses, especially on losses. He finally got out of it and became the general manager. He turned the reins over to Phil Bengston in 1968. But then he got the itch again, and the Redskins came to him and gave him 5% of the club, made him vice president and general manager and head coach. And irony of irony, I mentioned how the Packers, his first team, went 7-5. His Washington Redskins team went 7-5-2. Now, people wonder if people could cross over and do well in certain areas. Some people are just great motivators. And Lombardi could motivate. And Joe Paterno told me a story once of meeting Lombardi before a preseason game. And Lombardi was pacing back and forth. It was an exhibition game. Back then, they were not called preseason games. They were called exhibition games. And Joe said to him, he says, "Coach, you seem nervous." He says, "Hey, you don't get nervous in this." He says, "You shouldn't be in it." I remember Joe telling me that story, and I've read Lombardi's book, and there's a couple pages where Joe is in Lombardi's book. But he would have been 100 today. And I think everyone sees, you know, for example, they've seen the tape of him and the power sweep. "We want to get a seal here and a seal here and run it right through the alley," and blah, blah, blah. But like Lombardi was an iconic figure. In 9 seasons, he won 6 conference titles and 5 NFL championships. His postseason record, by the way, was 9-1. And when I say 9-1, he won the last 9 postseason games he coached in. And you know, he had a temper that was legendary. But at the same time, he will always be one of the great coaches of all time. They didn't name the trophy after him for no apparent reason whatsoever. So, it would have been interesting to see what he would have done with the Redskins. And because he got off to a great start. I mean, he rejuvenated everybody in Washington, without a doubt. He believed, you know, he always talked about family, religion, football. That brings up the great Jim Valvano speech, where he saw Lombardi, said, "All right," you know, and he'd just become the Valvano had just become the freshman coach at Rutgers or something like that. He saw this Lombardi speech, family, faith, and the Green Bay Packers. Family, faith, Green Bay Packers. He goes, "Okay, I'm going to go family, faith, Rutgers basketball. Family, faith, Rutgers basketball." So Valvano goes charging in the locker room. He says, "Man, there are 3 things you got to have. Family, faith, and the Green Bay Packers." And all those Rutgers players looked at him like he was nuts. JJ in Williamsport. Hi, JJ. Welcome to the show.
What's up, Steve? I hate to change the subject, but I've been looking on the Penn State site, and I've been trying to figure out who Penn State girls team have recruited for next year since they lost, what, four girls, four seniors? And I haven't seen anything on the site. Do you
happen
to know?
They have at least seven different players coming in. It's an all-new roster that they're going to have this year because they had dramatic turnover in a lot of ways on that roster this particular season. Now, they would not put it on the roster yet because those players aren't on campus yet. That's why they're not on the roster yet.
Well, no, I looked on the site itself just to see, like, volleyball. You can look on the volleyball, a volleyball site and find out who they recruited and stuff. And I just never saw anything for Bushi's because she lost four or five seniors this year.
Right, and, yeah, she did. She's got Maggie Lucas back. Let's start with that one.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, I've watched her all 4 years.
That part should be in pretty good shape. That part should be in pretty good shape because obviously of what she has. But I know she feels very good about her recruiting class. They brought in more height with this recruiting class. You can expect Candace Agee, for example, to take on a greater role this year. Dara Taylor will take on a greater role this year. Look for Talia East to take on a greater role as well with this team. Maggie Lucas obviously is going to be a senior star for them. But let's face it, they lost a Nikki Green. They lost an Alex Bentley.
Right.
You know, a Mia Nixon who had transferred in from BC. I mean, so those are players they're going to have to replace. But AG, Taylor, East, Ariel Edwards, Maggie, Tori Waldner, for example. Those are all going to be the veteran players that she's going to have to rely on. Everybody else going to be in teaching mode.
So they're not going to have anything on the site for a while then as to
They probably won't until they're actually on campus. For example, if you look at the Penn State football website, you know Christian Hackenberg's showing up, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
But they can't put him on the roster because he's officially not enrolled yet.
Yeah. I don't look at the roster. I just look at the site to see, and then I'll go to the football or the girls' volleyball site. And, like I said, the girls' basketball site to see if they put in there. Do you happen to know what ranking any of these girls might have as far as, I don't know, whether they rank three-star, four-star?
I think of the kids they got, I think at least two of them are top 50 kids. I think three of them are in the top 100. So, I mean, she recruited very well. They're very happy with what they have. They're just really young.
Right. Well, Maggie was young, too.
Yeah, at one point, now she's the veteran.
Right, but, I mean, she started out her freshman year.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
But she also started, and that team was allowed to grow together. Maggie was allowed to grow with Alex Bentley. You know, they really grew together, even though they were a year apart. They were allowed to grow with Nikki Green in the post. That's the same thing that's going to have to happen with this group. They're going to have to grow together. But the foundation of what she wants to do the next couple of years was laid in this particular class.
What did you think of the run for the NCAA this year?
Well, first of all, they're good enough to get to the NCAA based on what they have. If you have a Maggie Lucas on your team
I'm sorry, I meant this past year, their run.
I found, you know what, it's amazing how you do certain things. I thought it was disappointing. I really thought that they would be an Elite Eight team based on the veterans they had on that team. I think that what the NCAA did was wrong with them by sending him back to LSU for a second straight year. But if you're good enough, you're supposed to overcome that and move on. It turned out the bracket really fell nicely for them along the way because there are certain teams that got knocked out that I think could have actually helped them go even further. But I felt they should have been at least an Elite Eight team based on experience and talent from this past year. So, yeah, you know, if getting to the NCAA is a disappointment, I'm sure it's something the men would love to experience on an every year basis. But at the same time, this team had some expectations.
Yeah, I was definitely disappointed considering how far they went the year before that, and they had everybody back.
Right. They went to the Sweet 16. Yeah, they went to the Sweet 16 the year before UConn beat them. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay, then. Thanks a lot, Steve.
JJ, thank you. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. As we roll on here on a Tuesday, tomorrow, scheduled to be at the U.S. Open at Marion. Looking forward to that. It's been awfully wet down there. Late today is when a lot of the practice rounds took place. There'll probably be some practice rounds tomorrow as well. They are talking about the possibility of heavy rain down there on Thursday. I know Sarah mentioned that during the weather forecast, that Thursday they're looking at the possibility of some heavy rain, some thunderstorms. And we'll see how that plays out. Wow. So that is... That's the situation coming up on...
Hope you got cover there.
I'm going to need it, Sarah. I'm going to need it. I'm going to need it.
It's still good to be out there, though.
Oh, it is. But, you know, the interesting part about it is you know, the best place to watch the U.S. Open when you cover it is actually in the media tent.
Oh, yeah?
Well, yeah, because you can see everything going on.
Yeah, that's true. That kind of makes sense.
I mean, I've gone out on the course, okay, and I've done that, and which is a great experience. But then when it comes to that, to actually really get into the nuts and bolts of what's going on, you really want to be in the tent. So,
well, we'll still hope for good weather.
Well, Thursday's going to be rough.
I know.
Yeah, Thursday's going to be rough. Simple as that. But tomorrow we'll be down there. We're looking forward to it. Our thanks to Doug Smith today from Juniata College, Dave Ferguson, who talked to us today about bullying in sports and how to handle it as a parent. Tomorrow from the U.S. Open as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.